This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Danny Wisentowski, in for Elaine Shaw. It's been more than 40 years since truckloads of radioactive waste were dumped into Westlake Landfill in St. Louis. It left behind a deadly legacy from the country's atomic bomb program that had ended World War II. The health risk of this was not a mystery, but just exactly where that radioactive waste had gone, that was a needle that became lost in a vast haystack. In the late 1970s, the federal government used helicopters to measure gamma radioactivity to find two contaminated areas. But over the decades, we've come to understand so much more about that contamination and where it went after it was dumped. It was only last week that the Environmental Protection Agency announced an expansion of its cleanup effort and a price tag that is nearly $400 million. Here to talk about that expanding scope of the EPA cleanup and what this latest development means for the decades-long efforts around the Westlake Landfill, I'm joined now by Missouri Independent reporter Allison Kite. Allison, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And also with me is Dawn Chapman. She is the co-founder of the group Just Moms STL, which advocates for cleanup of the Westlake Landfill. And Dawn, welcome back to our show.
Thank you.
So we're going to discuss the EPA's latest announcement in just a bit. But first, Allison, help us understand a bit of how we got here. I mentioned how the government used helicopters to try to detect just where this radioactive contamination was located, but that was back in the late 70s. Just why is it so difficult to identify where this waste wound up?
Certainly. So the uranium for the Manhattan Project, which, as you mentioned, was the effort to build a nuclear bomb during World War II, was refined in downtown St. Louis. After the war, it was trucked out to St. Louis County and dumped at the airport and kind of moved around the county in the 60s and 70s before it was dumped at the Westlake Landfill. It was, you know, thought to be in two isolated areas from that helicopter testing that you mentioned, but there were some limitations to that testing. It did not detect radioactive waste that was further underground. And, you know, because in a landfill you have stuff moving around and fill dirt being added on top of waste and kind of shifts in the waste as it settles, there was not a good handle on where all of this waste was. And the EPA, as it has been testing to design the cleanup of the landfill, has identified waste in parts of the landfill that it previously thought were unaffected. And in addition, some waste has managed to migrate off the site into some groundwater.
Dawn Chapman, let me ask you something here, because you became involved in this issue in 2013. That was when you co-founded Just Moms STL, and this was, you know, decades after this was dumped, decades after this was just left there. What was the impetus for you starting to lead this advocacy group after all that time had already passed? Things clearly weren't okay. What alerted you to that?
So we became aware of the underground fire because of the smell. It was just like permeating the neighborhood. And when we were looking for more information about the fire and what it was we were actually inhaling, we became aware that there was radioactive waste from the Manhattan Project there. And as we were looking for more data, where is it? It's been sitting on the surface, you know, that same helicopter testing, you know, the limitations of that were very clear. And we said, well, this is 2013. What do you know about the site now? I mean, clearly we need some more eyes on it. We need to figure out where all this is so that the two don't meet. And we just were never given a good answer. And so, you know, it's been a decade plus of work to get EPA to even agree to do this testing, which was so obviously needed.
Allison, I want to talk about this latest announcement now, because this, the amount of time that has passed here and the amount of, it seems like, the federal government or the EPA saying the problem's not so bad. The problem's a smell. We can cap things. We have now gone years steadily just seeing this problem actually come to a clarity that folks like Dawn have had for a long time. On January 17th, the EPA announced that this, as you said, Allison, this radioactivity had spread to other areas, needed more cleanup. It revised its estimate for the cost of that
drastically, $100 million more, up to nearly $400 million total. So what exactly was the EPA saying here? How did they realize that this contamination had spread further? And where does that money amount come from?
Certainly. So the EPA's original plan had been to cap the place a cap on the landfill, not excavate it. And folks like, through the advocacy of folks like Dawn, there was a revised cleanup plan signed. And part of that process to clean up the landfill requires, you know, further borings into the landfill and testing to confirm the boundaries of what needs to be excavated, what needs to be capped. And basically through that process that the EPA has gone through, they have found that, you know, folks like Dawn were right, that this this waste was more widespread than the EPA had a handle on. And so the portion of the landfill that will need to be excavated expanded significantly. Crews will have to dig up another 20,000 cubic yards of contaminated soil and debris. And the excavation portion of the project that was supposed to be $229 million will now be $392. And so some of that increase is because of inflation, but also the cost jumped significantly because of the additional remediation that will need to take place.
Allison, I want to, you know, kind of add some clarity to just the kinds of landscapes and scenarios we're talking about, because we have the Westlake landfill, there's Coldwater Creek, where radioactive waste was dumped, got into the water supply, and then there's the Bridgeton landfill, which is smoldering, and that fire, that smoldering, is approaching nearby to the radioactive waste. So when we're talking about this contamination that is spread, the EPA is talking about, which one of these scenarios are we talking about? Is it all of them? And do we know how this contamination has spread through those different mediums?
Sure. So part of it is that the contamination was always more widespread than the EPA was aware. You know, they've said that the material outside of the areas that they originally thought it was in was likely always there. It has shifted some, but there was also just material that was missed in the first place. But so the Westlake landfill is separate from the Bridgeton landfill that you mentioned, that is the part that's smoldering. And so while the smolder of the Bridgeton landfill is not as severe as it was when folks like Dawn were smelling it in 2013 and becoming concerned about this issue, you know, it does worry, continue to worry folks that you have an underground smolder, you know, adjacent to this radioactive waste.
Dawn, you know, in your decade plus work here, you have a lot of that has involved trying to talk to the EPA, convince them to take things seriously. There have been some pretty contentious public meetings in that time span. Take us back. You know, what was their initial response to you when you began this campaign, talking to the EPA, telling them, clean up your mess?
This is why I'm really angry about it today, because we were met with just a complete solid wall of, well, that's not necessary. We know where it all is. And Allison Kite is right. Where the radioactive waste is today, where they know it is, it's always been. And it was their responsibility to find it before I even moved into the area. And they've had this site for over 30 years as a Superfund site. So EPA, this is a failure of them to properly characterize their Superfund site. And now what we're faced with today is, well, yeah, it's there, but it's always been there. And it's like, yeah, no kidding. Do you think we put our lives on hold for a decade to fight you, to get you to do this testing because we thought we were wrong? We were always hoping that it wasn't as bad as it really is, but it turns out that that's not the case. And, you know, so while I appreciate all the hard work that EPA's put in now, they are a couple decades too late. And that is going to directly correlate to illnesses in my community, to my son's illness, my husband's illness, and all the people around us.
So I want to zoom in on that, because you know, you are quoted in Allison's most recent story talking about the EPA's original investigation. You describe it as being botched. But in a lot of ways, it felt like that investigation was waiting for things to resolve themselves, or, you know, perhaps it couldn't be proven that those health challenges, the cancers, could be linked to this radioactivity. If you had to zoom in on what that mistake the EPA made, how they botched that initial investigation, was it not listening to you, or did they waste those resources and go into some other direction?
You know, in my opinion, they didn't want to find out how bad this site really was. They were afraid of it. I think that they knew that there was always going to be a very expensive fix, and I think that they felt like they could continue to kick the can down the road. The fire stopped that. The fire made it, elevated it in the community and made people aware of just what was lurking there and had been for decades. And so I have always, even now talking to EPA folks that were around back then who told me something very different when I would talk to them then, I look at it now as fear. I think they were afraid that this had made a lot of people sick and it had happened under their watch.
Allison, I want to ask you the same question. If we're trying to understand what changed about the EPA's approach to this, was it just that enough time had passed for them to have the technology to understand this? Or was this, you know, as the metaphor says, where there's smoke, there's fire, was there a radioactive smoke that finally alerted people that there is a real fire, a real problem that has to be looked at? What was it that got us here?
I think, you know, I think Don's right. I think it was the fire alerting the community to the severity of the problem. I think that without that effort by Don and other folks in the area, I'm not sure that the original plan to cap the waste would have been overturned. And so I think that it was the real kind of turning point, because then once there was a decision to excavate some of this waste, that necessitated all of this testing that has found the additional waste. So I think it's the community involvement that really turned a corner.
Now, Allison, you mentioned that part of the EPA's new announcement is that they have to move another 20,000 cubic yards. I believe that's just about shy of the waste that would cover an entire football field if that waste was 10 feet high. This is a huge amount. What would go into actually moving that? Are we just, you know, dump trucks moving soil? What does that actually mean?
Sure. So it will require excavation that the EPA is designing and figuring out how that will take place now, and off-site disposal somewhere that can safely store this huge amount of contaminated material.
Now, we need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about the effort to get nuclear waste cleaned up in the Westlake Landfill Superfund site in Bridgeton. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Danny Wisentowski, in for Elaine Cha. We're talking today with Missouri Independent reporter Allison Kite and Dawn Chapman, the co-founder of the group Just Moms STL, which advocates for cleanup of the Westlake landfill. Last month, the Environmental Protection Agency announced that radioactive contamination at the site was far more widespread than previously known. They estimate that it will cost nearly $400 million to mitigate the nuclear waste that was dumped at the site in the 70s from the Manhattan Project. Now, Allison, I want to ask another thing about this EPA announcement. Was it admitting a mistake, you know, that the previous efforts were insufficient? Does it acknowledge that?
That's a great question. I don't know that that there is an admission of an error necessarily as part of the EPA's communications. They've said that this is an important step forward in cleanup, but I don't know that it comes necessarily with that validation along with it.
You know, there has been criticism, though, from community members like Don Chapman, but also from some public officials. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley has asked President Trump's new pick to run the EPA, that's former Republican Congressman Lee Zeldin, to visit Westlake Landfill. And here's what Josh Hawley told St. Louis Public Radio reporter Kate Grumke.
I think it's important to see the real impact, that this is not just a name on a sheet. This isn't just a name on the Superfund list. But that real folks have lost their lives, they have lost family members, they have children with diseases. We've got some of the highest rates of cancer in the nation. I think he needs to see it and meet some of those people. And he needs to see the site itself to understand the significance here. And he also needs to see EPA's failure. I mean, EPA has not done their job for decades now. The soil, the groundwater, it is not free of radioactive material. It is not cleaned up, as anybody who lives anywhere close knows. And he needs to see that and experience it for himself. And he agreed with that, and that's why he's going to come.
And that was Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, who spoke with my colleague Kate Grumke. Dawn, you have been in contact with Senator Hawley's office. He has talked about this for a while. Have they mentioned a specific date for such a visit with Lee Zeldin of the EPA?
We have not heard a specific date, but even today we're having conversations about when that could be and what that would look like. And my other co-founder, Karen Nickel, and I met Senator Hawley when he was AG Hawley years ago as the Attorney General of the state of Missouri. So he's been pretty involved since then. But I do think that this is going to happen, and we look forward to our community hosting him.
This notion that public officials have to actually go to a place to see what the problem is, to actually experience it, that this isn't just a list on a piece of paper. That's something that I think I've heard from a lot of folks that has been told to the EPA officials. Has that moved a line, actually getting these officials to go to these communities and talk with people? Do they come away changed, or do they come away saying, well, we've done enough?
It absolutely works. It's essential. And we have watched people, I'll never forget the previous Trump administration coming out on the site with them and just looking at the change in their face, because the site is massive. When you stand on top of this and you look at World War II era Manhattan Project waste that's just sat on the surface of a community and all the other areas we know it's in now, and you're just looking and doing a 360 on the site, It's staggering. And there's no doubt at that point when they leave, whether they admit it or not, that they know that this has made our community very, very sick.
Allison, I want to ask about another piece that's moving in the Senate, that is. Senator Josh Hawley, who we just heard from, and a bipartisan group of colleagues, they've introduced something called the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. Allison, what would that act do?
Sure. That act would as the title kind of indicates, provide compensation to folks who have been exposed to radiation. This is something that that Senator Hawley and Senator Lujan have really pushed primarily, and it would provide compensation to folks in the St. Louis area who are exposed to the Westlake Landfill, Coldwater Creek, but it would also provide compensation to folks in the American Southwest who were exposed to nuclear bomb testing during World War II. There is an existing Radiation Exposure Compensation Act that provided coverage to some of those folks who were exposed to testing, but not nearly the footprint of folks who were likely exposed. It was a much more narrow bill passed in the 90s, and the version supported by Senator Josh Hawley would expand that both in the Southwest and add Missouri and other places where uranium was refined or handled as part of the Manhattan Project.
Dawn, this, you know, the idea of compensation. You know, you have lived through this period. You're still in this community. What would fair compensation seem like to you?
Well, there's a part of the program that's compensation, but there's also a part of the program that allows for screenings so that those of us that have been exposed can be screened and can catch cancers early, catch illnesses before they develop and turn terminal. So there's a proactive approach to this that's not talked about. It's more than just compensation. But I will say, though, having worked with Senator Lujan and Senator Hawley and, you know, Karen and I going to D.C. and meeting all these communities, our community is still one of the worst impacted communities in the nation. Nobody has. the level, the amount that we have here in the St. Louis region.
You know, I know it's, this process is still developing, but if we're talking about compensation, you know, eventually this will reach some kind of number. Is there an estimate, or as someone who has lived through this, where might that number lie?
So the number for the St. Louis region, including the St. Charles region and the Weldon Spring processing plant, is somewhere around $4 billion. And that's for RECA. That's for the compensation, but that's also including the medical treatments and the screening. So that's everything included. And, you know, that is the cost of the failure of the agencies to properly identify these sites, which have then gone decades and made community members sick.
Now, when we're talking about these agencies, and, you know, we are now at the beginning of another administration, and Allison, I wanted to ask you a bit about the status of the EPA. Last week, 168 EPA staffers were put on administrative leave. More layoffs are expecting. Is there any sense if this could impact this cleanup effort here in St. Louis?
Certainly, I haven't heard any specific impacts that it might have on the St. Louis cleanup effort. I think that's a concern that is worth taking a look into. I think the fact that President Trump's pick to run the EPA has taken an interest is certainly promising, but fewer staff means everything takes longer to get done. So I think it's certainly something to keep an eye on and could present an issue.
And Dawn, you've been in close contact with the EPA over the years, various employees. What have you been hearing? Are you worried that you are losing potentially some allies in this department?
So I think there's always that fear. I think that, you know, one thing, having Administrator Zeldin come out and visit the site, it's really hard to cut resources for a site that you're standing on top of and you're looking at going, oh my gosh, this has hurt people, right? So I think that it does help us potentially keep some resources or gain them. But I will say this, I think that one of the things that, you know, as much as it sounds like we're beating up on EPA, it's very important that this agency focus on its directive of keeping people safe, not getting scoring points and PR points in the press. And I think they need to get back to that and understanding these sites and what's happened at them and how they're hurting people and get back to cleaning them up so that communities can get on and start afresh and give them a healthy chance.
So Dawn, you live only a couple miles from this landfill. People have chosen to move. People near Coldwater Creek, learning of the contamination, learning of some of these illnesses. You are still there. What keeps you there in your home and neighborhood?
Well, financially, the option to move out of that area and into a different school district wasn't there for us. And the other issue is the areas where I could move that were maybe financially similar also have radioactive waste, such as Coldwater Creek. So, you know, they're it's hard in St. Louis to find an area like ours to move to that doesn't have radioactive contamination, albeit not all of them have a fire next to theirs. But the other thing is, at some point, as you kind of alluded in this conversation, it became very clear that it was probably too late for me and my family, that we have been exposed, and it was important that we do what we could to put this site back and fix it, along with Karen and I. You know, we're essentially planting a tree that we really won't live to see, you know, be able to sit under and get shade from. You know, and RECA, none of the illnesses in my family or Karen's are covered under RECA.
And that was the Compensation Act that has been reintroduced. You mentioned your son being sick. Could you tell us about, you know, their conditions and why you do believe that they are related to this contamination?
So when my son first got sick several years ago, when we were in the emergency room, he actually asked the doctor, did the landfill make me sick? And the, you know, the doctor looked right over at me and he goes, I know who you are. And I said, okay, well, we were in a crisis situation. And he looked at him and said, yeah, buddy, it could have. So yes, I believe that it did. It certainly didn't make it any better. And I think that, you know, what Karen and I have tried to do through Just Moms STL is become the people that we needed for us, that should have been there to keep us safe. a decade ago. And I think, I hope EPA sees that as their upcoming challenge too. You know, that these people can rise up, and certainly we'll do anything that we can within that agency to point out why we need a strong EPA.
Mm. Allison, I wanted to go back to you. You have been reporting on this issue for a while. Again, a similar question, you know, communities are facing these issues, the sicknesses, the reports of the other contamination, but they've been on their own, I think, waiting for the EPA and others to act. What have you seen from how communities and people are adjusting? Are people leaving, or are people doing, you know, as Dawn said, you know, staying where they are because they've already been there for a while?
Sure. I think Dawn might be better situated to answer that, but it seems that the folks who have gotten invested in making sure this site gets cleaned up are really committed to seeing it through. I don't feel like I've seen evidence of you know, an exodus from the communities around the site. I think that it's folks want to see their community cleaned up and have it be a safe place to live.
And Allison, you know, we talked a bit about some of the political public officials who've been involved in this. Senator Josh Hawley, Senator Eric Schmidt, also from Missouri, went to school with some of the people who have gotten sick from radioactive contamination near the Westlake landfill, near Coldwater Creek. What has Senator Schmidt said or promised about these cleanup efforts?
Sure. Senator Schmidt, I would say, has been, you know, in concert with Senator Hawley. I think Senator Hawley has taken the lead, especially on the compensation efforts. But, you know, I think that they both are deeply concerned about the impacts to this community and want to see people get taken care of.
And Dawn, what have you seen from Senator Schmidt?
You know, he lived just right around the corner from where I live, and his parents still live there, and we are a very close community. The last time I spoke with him, we were actually talking about a fundraiser for a community, a resident that he knew that I knew, and trying to coordinate and see, you know, how we could help this family that was struggling. So this is a very personal thing for him, and it's, I think for him, it's the tragedy of every time you turn around in this community, somebody else is sick, somebody else's kid is sick, there's a sick teacher. And so for him, I have seen that weigh very, very heavily on him. And when my son first became sick, he was actually one of the first elected officials. He reached out, and we had a very personal conversation about it.
You know, Dawn, before we began the interview, you gave me I think an email or a release from last month, and this was from Missouri's Department of the Environment, of Natural Resources. And this document basically said, hey, there is a high probability of radiological materials in the Bridgeton landfill, and that if I'm reading this right, they want the EPA to come out and look at that additionally. Could this target area of where this contamination is, does it need to be expanded even further? You know, is there, you know, not just, you know, could it go even beyond 400 million because we've not actually tackled the real problem?
So the area that they're referring to is the area that's currently on fire. And the answer is we will never know, because the EPA cannot test that area. It could make the fire worse. And they'll never be able to really test that area. So what the state's asking for is, hey, we need EPA to own this entire site. The other reason that's needed is because there is going to be radioactive waste left over at this site, even from other areas that are too deep for them to dig. So I think that it is very important that EPA step up. This is not a typical landfill that the state of Missouri would normally regulate, right? This is a Superfund site. So, you know, we do back the state on that. And as far as the high probability goes, yeah, absolutely. Whether it's windblown or it was put there in that area, while there are different areas on site, the site is one complex. It's within mere feet of each other.
Allison, what do you make of that point? You know, will the burning radioactive trash fire become an even greater problem? Does the EPA need to expand its scope even further?
Sure. So I think that you know, when the fire was at its peak in 2013, this was the exact scenario that people were worried about, right? The fire reaching radioactive waste, although now instead of the fire reaching radioactive waste in another part of the landfill, what we're talking about is the Missouri Department of Natural Resources thinking that there may be radioactive contamination in the part of the landfill that was already smoldering. And so I think that to Don's point, I think that there are some technical difficulties of figuring that out. But I think that the Missouri Department of Natural Resources letter was, you know, saying that the EPA, this is really your level of expertise. Please take this over. And the EPA, for its part, said that there was no new evidence or information to support any claim that radiologically impacted material is present in the Bridgeton landfill. And the EPA was seeking more information from the Missouri Department of Natural Resources about that letter. I asked the Department of Natural Resources about why are you saying that there's probably radioactive waste in this landfill while the EPA is saying there is no evidence of that. And they said that they, being the state agency, said it supported the expanded cleanup and recommended that EPA considers being the lead agency for all the affected, potentially affected properties. So I don't know where we go from here on that.
Yeah, I mean, you have the community saying one thing, the state agency saying one thing, and the EPA saying another. Dawn, you have your hand up, and I was watching your face as Allison kind of described the EPA's position, and I feel like I'm getting a glimpse of your experience for these last 12 years. What's making you shake your head?
I'll tell you, what EPA owes our community is a simple answer, which is we don't know. There's no evidence that there's radioactive waste in the fire. No kidding, because you have never tested. And the number of times, Allison is correct with the statement, the number of times over the past 12 years that statement, that identical statement, has been given to us, it's been said about other areas that they now have come out and said, well, yep, there's radioactive waste there. We have pointed to all these different areas and said, why don't you test there? Well, because we don't have any evidence. No, you don't. The entire site, there are a lot of unknowns. And I think for EPA, I think they think that that would not reassure us. But what it would do is make us think that they're telling us the truth for once. So just look at us and say, hey, we don't know.
Dawn, as we, in our last minute or so here, you know, just listening to your response and what you've gone through, there's a sense that you are in the middle of a fight with the EPA to convince them to see this. Where do you find some of that strength, and where do you find hope to keep doing this as this cycle of contradiction and delay really just keeps happening in different ways?
Well, you know, I'm not alone. I have my co-founder, Karen Nickel. You know, we have our community. I am so proud of our community. Our community is committed to seeing this cleanup through. We have a great cleanup plan that we fought really hard for, and we can see it. It's on the horizon. So that gives us, you know, the ability to fight, and also the potential for the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. I think we have a lot of good things in front of us that are going to help us finally close the chapter on the Manhattan Project in St. Louis, and that's what we have to look forward to. That's going to happen.
And Allison, you know, as a reporter covering this issue, what's the next piece that you're looking at? What development will signal that we're on to the next stage of this?
I think the next big thing will be when we get a timeline for when there might be a cleanup at Westlake. You know what? When the EPA made this announcement that the cleanup would be bigger, would cost more, they said they still don't have a start date for the cleanup. But that this is, you know, a very crucial step toward that. And I think that that will be a huge day for the community when the EPA is able to say this is when we're going to start.
Allison Kite is a reporter with the Missouri Independent. You can read her latest reporting on this subject on our website at stlpr.org. Allison, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dawn Chapman is the co-founder of Just Moms STL. Dawn, as always, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Foyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.